now present to you our friend, the feisty Eric Zorn, Incredible Tribune columnist. How are you, feisty Eric Zorn?
Now, we never did try incredible as an adjective.
Well, you are incredible. That goes
Stick
without
with feisty.
Saying. But you're so feisty.
I think Wendy's right. I think Wendy's bringing me back down to earth. So, yeah.
Well, incredible is a given, right?
I think you should be, as a journalist, you should be credible, not incredible.
Yeah, right?
But you, sir, are both. I find you both credible and incredible.
Or incredibly credible.
And incorrigible. Eric, we don't often talk sports with you, but there's a lot going on in the world of sports, and I know you wrote about a couple of these things recently. Let's start out by talking about what happened
in the Masters with
Jordan Spieth.
Well, it was really the whole – people always say, how can you watch golf? It's just a bunch of rich white guys striking a little ball around an impossibly –
I watch bowling.
You watch bowling?
Well, when I want to take a nap because it's very soothing.
See –
they should use a golf ball in bowling. It'd be a better game.
A couple of great things happened. One great thing happened at the Masters tournament this week was like on the first day, in the first morning, Ernie Els, who's won the tournament before, is a great golfer from South Africa, toward the end of his career, he gets to the first hole, and he has like a 3-foot putt, and he can't put it in. He's like a little kid at a mini golf course. He hits it by the hole one way, by the hole the other way, by the hole. Then he tries to hockey it in, you know, just the way you do. And he just reach the club out and knock it back in. That doesn't go in. I think he took 6 putts to get it in the hole.
And you know, if that's the first hole, you know that now your tournament is shot.
He's
you can't
done.
Rebound.
Yeah, he did not make the cut and so made no money. But what was interesting to me was how...
Eight shots is what he took.
I mean, the video online is hilarious. He just keeps missing this... And you're just thinking, like, I've been there. I've watched my kids do this. This is hilarious. But the thing is that he then, you know, hits the ball in and he moves on, goes and continues to play. Doesn't just, like, go jump into a lake. Which is probably what I would have done.
Right.
Take all his clubs and empty them into the creek. But that was Monday morning. And yesterday afternoon, Jordan Spieth, who is the number two golfer in the world, and he won the Masters the year before. He's won, I think, two majors tournaments last year he won. And he's the star, up-and-coming star. And he's leading by 5 shots going into the last 9 holes, which is pretty much an insurmountable lead in most golf tournaments. Just fell apart. He bogeyed the first 2 holes on the back nine, one over par both of them. And then he gets to this relatively short par 3 where you got to hit the ball over some water. And he hits it, and it hits in the embankment and dribbles back into the water. And everyone goes, oh, you know, it's terrible, terrible. And so then he goes to this area and drops the ball, hits his third shot, takes the penalty shot. And he hits a shot that every amateur golfer, you don't play, right?
No.
You never play, but every amateur golfer knows this thing where you hit behind the ball, you just take a bunch of sod with it, and the ball kind of pops forward, but it doesn't really go anywhere. This one barely made it into the water. It just like plunked it up. It was just one of these shots that every duffer has hit in his life. So now he's hitting his 5th shot, and he airmails that over the green. He finally gets in with a 4 over par on the hole, has totally lost his lead at this point, and he goes on to lose the tournament by, I think, what's it, 3 shots.
Oh, no.
But what was interesting to me, first of all, it was just sort of fascinating to watch this incredibly great athlete at the top of his game fall apart like that. You'd never see, maybe like Steph Curry airballing a couple of free throws or something. I mean, something you just never would see.
Right.
And then to see how he handled that, which was, I thought, really interesting.
What did he do?
Well, he gave an interview to the TV people afterwards, which I'm sure he just wanted to crawl into a hole.
Right.
After he
except he would have missed the hole based on what you're telling us.
he would have tried to crawl in, and there would have been this like grassy patch.
Right.
Oh, it's over there. That's good, Bill. I'm going to use that one.
Please.
And not attribute it to
all
you.
All right, fine.
But he gave a really classy interview to CBS, and he said, you know, I was really tough. I was really trying, and I'm really disappointed. And, you know, the kind of thing you don't, you know, have to, you really, oh, he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
And then, of course, part of the Masters tradition is that the winner gets a green sport coat.
Nice. And wear that with anything.
And the winner of the previous year, it looks great.
Yeah.
Winner from the previous year and then has to put it on the guy who won this year.
Yeah.
So he then has to go into this ceremony and, because he won last year, he had to take the green jacket and put it on this year's winner. And you know he's just dying inside, but he did it. And it was pretty cool. But what
There's a huge difference in the money he would have won. I'm sure he still walked away with some money.
I think, you know, tag days for him. But
you're probably talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars
probably,
that he lost for having a couple
bad. I know the winner got $1.8
million.
I'm not sure, you know, second place. But usually it's several hundred thousand dollars less than
right.
that. But what one of the reasons I was paying so much attention to it was that I had written a column for Sunday talking about how when these tournaments are on and I'm looking for a rooting interest, I usually root for the American golfers.
Do you? Why?
Yeah. I think in part because I've been trained to by the TV networks, which for the most part, they always will tell you they focus a lot on where they're from.
Yeah.
Like, when they do Cubs broadcast, they talk all the time. They don't say, like, here comes the Cuban, Jorge Soler.
Right.
They mention it from time to time, but on a lot of these golf broadcasts, I think it's true of tennis, too. They put a little flag by the person's name as though it's some Olympic event and they're representing.
It does seem Olympic-like.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, like, and also, what other reason do you have sometimes to root for somebody when you're watching these individual games, right? I mean, when you watch tennis,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Why do you root for who you root for? Do you root for Americans over Federer and Djokovic?
Sometimes. Well, the two guys you just mentioned, usually that's almost always who I root for because they're just so much fun to watch. It's amazing to watch them play. But there is an element. I always like seeing somebody who's unseated or just one of those stories where you go, boy, here's a guy that nobody knew about 3 or 6 months ago, and now all of a sudden he or she is in a major tournament. So I always want them to do well.
You don't go with the outfit?
Sometimes I'll also go with the outfit. Yeah,
yeah. The color coordinator.
It's a great outfit. I hope that guy wins.
It's hard to know. One of these sports, it's like, I mean, I always used to root for Tiger Woods. Johanna hated that because Tiger Woods was such a cad.
Yeah.
Know? And such a almost sociopathically competitive guy.
Right.
But he was so fantastic to watch. I mean, incredible golfer and cold-blooded. And
it seemed like back then, and it's not that many years ago, you almost didn't stand a chance of beating him. He was so at the top of his game that it was impossible to beat him for quite a while.
And these individual sports need somebody like that.
Yeah.
They need a preeminent figure.
Yeah.
And
it could have been Jordan Spieth.
Well, it could have been.
It still probably is. Despite this, you don't think so anymore?
I don't know.
No one's going to forget this, especially him.
He's got many years ahead of him.
He's sure, 20, he's 22.
22 or 23. 22. I'm not sure. 22?
Yeah.
He's got many years ahead of him to make up for this, but that's got to be. He put the ball in the water on that same hole 2 years ago at his first Masters when he was chasing the ultimate winner and he fell apart on that hole then too. So there's a little bit of a psychological thing there. But that would have never happened to Tiger Woods. I don't think Tiger Woods ever had a collapse like that.
How does this happen? He knows how to play.
It becomes a mental thing, though. Like once you... He had a 5-stroke lead and at some point it became a 2-stroke lead, a 3, then a 2. And then you're going... What's going on with me? And that plays into your mindset, you know.
And golf isn't like tennis or any sport where you can just like try harder. I think you can bear down sometimes.
Yeah.
In some of these sports, I know certainly in playing basketball, you're like, I'm just going to try harder.
Right.
Now. In golf, it is such a mental
game.
I'm going
to think harder.
You have to actually not try harder. You have to
be more comfortable.
All the fundamentals that brought you to where you were. And so, I think it was a rookie mistake. But golf needs somebody like that to be the one everyone tunes in to watch
right.
and show every shot. And,
right.
And Tiger's not coming back. He's 40 and his back is shot.
Isn't it sad, though, to be 40 and have people realize your best days are long gone?
Well, there was one. Actually, there ended up being one foreigner I was really rooting for, though, toward the end, was Bernhard Langer, who was 58.
Yeah.
And he was in second or third place.
Oh,
wow. The last round, I was thinking that, and the announcers were saying this would be one of the great achievements
sure.
in sports. Of course, he just faded the
he
last
fell
day.
Off.
But that's too bad. But it's fascinating.
Eric Zorn is here, and yes, he's feisty. You hear him. You know what I'm talking about. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. More with us, Bill and Wendy, and Eric Zorn in just a moment. It's WGN.
We're visiting with the very feisty Tribune columnist, Eric Zorn.
Don't deny it.
I don't know
you're
if we're going to continue talking golf, so I kind of left that open for you.
Well,
to grab.
There is another sports story that you've written about, and this is in regards to women's basketball, most notably the WNBA.
Right.
Correct?
Well, Elena Deledon, who is the
we got next
MVP from what's we got next?
A basketball
that the
phrase.
Women's NBA.
Oh, is that
the WBA?
I thought maybe it was like the sky was coming to WGN. Or something.
No,
no. She's proposed lowering the hoop from 10 feet to 9 feet.
Yep. That's stupid.
Not the first person to have that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, so that you would have, you know, alley oops and dunks, the same sort of things you see in the NBA. And her argument is that this would show off the athleticism of the players in the NBA, make the game more exciting for fans, because, you know, there are dunks in the WNBA, but they're few and far between. Only a couple players can do it, and they really have to have an open.
Why don't they just get a Nerf basketball set, and maybe we could do it that way? There's no need to lower that.
They do have a smaller ball.
Yes, you're right.
For women's basketball. And, you know, the idea of altering a sport to make it friendlier for women or easier for women to accommodate some physical realities for women. It's not unheard of. In women's golf, the holes are shorter.
And the tee is closer up, right?
Well, that's right. They bring the holes aren't as long.
Yeah.
In volleyball, the net is a little bit lower for women than men. So it's not like it's this unthinkable thing to alter a sport to make it so that women can compete better. And actually, in women's professional tennis, they're three sets instead of five. What's up with that?
But now, do they? Because in high school, I played basketball. I wouldn't have wanted the net lowered. Are they going to lower it in high school now?
Well, it's among the many practical obstacles to her idea is that a lot of hoops are a fixed height. There's some, like in our local park district, you can adjust them because they play kiddie basketball,
right?
And they lower it like down to 6 feet or something for little kids to play.
Yeah.
So that
or
so
me,
that,
right?
But a lot of places, a lot of gyms, you can't just lower the hoop, so it would really be a problem. People say that it would be really hard for women to adjust to the new height. It'd be hard to learn to shoot on it. I don't really think that's true.
I do. You've spent your whole life shooting at it at this height.
Yeah, but you've spent your whole life refining a form
Style. You're used to how high you have to arc it. It would change everything.
Well, it would certainly make the game different, really different.
You get a higher scoring game for sure.
You see, 9 feet, yes. Well, and 9 feet is actually awfully low. I think maybe 9.5 feet. My basic idea is I think it's worth experimenting with this to try it. Maybe take a small,
sure, because you're a guy,
a small college league, and just see what it does to the game.
What do the players want? Do most of the players want to lower it or not want to lower it?
I don't know if they've taken a poll. Diana Taurasi, who is a star for, I think Houston maybe.
Yeah.
She was saying, they might as well put us into a skirt and send us back to the kitchen.
Oh,
she was really opposed,
that drastic.
Really opposed to it. So it probably isn't going anywhere. But you know, it's not like they don't change rules in sports from time to time.
Right, sure.
I mean, certainly the three-point shot in basketball is one
of
the rules
a bunch
that really
of changes.
Changed the game. So they do alter it. Now, that would be a drastic thing to lower the rim, but I think it could be interesting.
But if let's say you're a woman professional basketball player and you get news that that's going to be the case, don't you feel like the game has been altered as if to say you're not good enough to score on a 10-point basket?
Make the floor different so we can wear high heels while playing.
There you go.
There's an idea.
Free spirit or whatever that shoe was.
Right.
Or just little mini tramps around. I think that you shouldn't close your mind to the idea of changing a sport, altering a sport to make it more dynamic,
to make
exciting.
It better. Yeah.
And so that the height 10 feet was very arbitrary when James Naismith hung the peach baskets in the YMCA to keep the rowdy boys busy.
I'm surprised they don't still have peach baskets up instead of nets. That's a better look.
Well, you could raise the men. People have actually talked about raising the men's hoop up to 11 feet or 12 feet even, because people think the dunk has become too important.
That.
But I love the dunk.
It's fun to watch.
It's very exciting. Thing. So and actually I would like a 9-foot hoop because I might be able to dunk on a 9-foot hoop.
And a trampoline.
Well, I could probably get the 9-foot hoop still.
You know, we have in our driveway, we have an adjustable.
Right.
Right. So sometimes it can be at 10, but we've moved it down when our daughters were little, we moved it down to 6 or 7.
Right.
And then I kept thinking when I was playing and it was down there, if I was taller, I would want to play this all the time to be up that close to the net. It's fantastic.
Very easy, yeah. So, but it was a very interesting conversation. On Facebook and in comments thread, people had the same. A lot of people have the same reaction that Wendy did. That is just
don't do it.
Just don't
sexist,
do it.
Don't change the
next.
Game. But it's not. It doesn't say that women aren't. It just says that women aren't as tall.
Right.
They're not.
Which is true.
I mean, these people who play in the NBA, they're pituitary cases.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they're like, you have guys like
pituitary cases.
They're like 6'10".
Yeah.
And they're playing guard. Hard. You know,
right.
I mean,
Bertrand should play.
Yeah, Bertrand's got some game.
Yao Ming taught him how to play years ago. It's a crazy story. So, all right. Well, thank you, Eric, for being here, for being as feisty as we would hope.
I'm glad to be feisty.
You're incredibly feisty. We'll find out what Steve has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.